Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST. And up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. My name is Tim, and welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. The topic of our podcast today is The Man Who Wouldn't Die, the indestructible Michael Malloy. It's an interesting story of a homeless gentleman who was targeted by a group of criminals in an insurance scheme, and they tried to kill him to collect insurance, and he was not complying. So it's a funny story. It's an interesting story. We'll get into that shortly, but before we do, I would like to remind everyone, this is an adult podcast. We use adult language, so if that's something that you're not into, listen to a different podcast.
Since when are we giving out?
We get a lot of complaints.
And so we won't get complaints about it, and we're not wasting your time. There will be banter.
Yeah, and there will be banter, and we'll get off topic. So
yes. If you don't like that, we have not wasted more than 2 minutes of your time.
Yeah,
so
please find a podcast that where there's no banter and
no cursing,
yeah. And they talk about Disney things or something. I don't know.
Disney things.
Yeah. But we swear, we get off track, we banter.
Well, hence the E. Didn't you put E on our thing on iTunes?
Well, some people don't see that. So
there should be a B for banter.
We also, we banter a lot. We get off topic, so it's a comedy podcast. So you'll get the facts. We'll talk about the story. We get the basic story right. But we try to be funny, and sometimes we're not, and we fall short, and people don't like that. So if this is not your thing, we're telling you up front now, so we don't want to waste any more of your time. If obscenity, if foul language does not bother you, and you like comedy and you like history, then by all means, continue to listen.
And we will probably mention boobs once or twice during this podcast.
At least we have to mention them twice, because mm-hmm. one for each boob.
Yeah, you can't look.
We actually have three boobs. We actually have three boobs on this podcast.
I know.
Let me introduce first to my left, the very lovely and talented, the queen of mean, the mistress of the macabre, Satan's dirty little secret, pill popping, penis loving, Brandy. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm okay, Timmy. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Are you excited about this topic?
I just could not be. I peed a little, when you said that we were going to do this.
Well, I pee a lot, and I'm going to see a doctor about that, but I'm glad.
As you should.
I'm glad that you're looking forward to this.
You pee when you're not expecting it.
Yeah.
Do not buy
it. I pee a lot unexpectedly.
I pee every not buy a clit o'clock.
I pee every morning at 5 a.m., but I don't get out of bed until 7. Let me also introduce a man who's not here officially yet.
No, he's not.
Who continues to interrupt Brandy time.
I know.
Violate protocol.
Right.
He does violate.
Violates a lot of things. Human decency. Jeez.
Let me introduce the moral compass of our podcast, the man who is known as the face of Bloody Stool.
Now, for God's sake, will you quit with the Bloody Stool?
He's now become known since our last podcast.
No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
The face of decaying vagina.
I do. No.
He does.
I mentioned decaying vagina. It's a problem.
Well, and don't forget his dalliance into homosexuality.
Yes, he had a very... We posted on our Facebook group page, everyone was posting their senior pictures, and Charles posted a picture of him and another guy at his senior
at prom.
We was getting ready to go pick up our dates.
Sure you were. From
and
Canada.
If we were.
From Canada.
If we weren't, why are you judging me?
I'm not judging you. No. I just said dalliance.
You're completely okay. We accept your homosexuality, Charles. But our last podcast, we talked about Carl Tanzler, the man who slept with a corpse. And we had a lengthy discussion on decaying vagina. And Colonel is, you know.
I've set up a foundation.
He set up a foundation.
And but I'm not the face of the foundation.
He's the face of decaying vagina.
I'm just a guy trying to help out the world. That's
you
all
are.
I am.
The very honorable Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawkwaters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm wonderful. Well, no, I'm fucking aggravated today, Timmy. I got my goddamn phone. It doesn't work. Then I tried to switch over phones, and it doesn't work. My touch screen's gone all hinky on me.
I'm sorry.
Get a burner.
Would you like to use my burner?
I'm gonna go get a burner. You know what? I'm getting a burner. I'm not giving nobody my damn telephone no more.
All ballers have burner phones.
I'm getting a baller phone.
Yeah. Look, Brandy time short for that
burner.
Shit. A baller burner.
You didn't really have anything important to say.
We'll never know, will we?
You're just a girl.
You're just a girl. You got girl stuff going on.
Yeah, you're just here to look pretty and have your boobs out.
Now that's the most sexist thing I ever heard. As an enlightened man, I have to protest.
You told me we only need her because she has boobs.
I did not say because she has boobs. I said we will mention boobs. She does have boobs. Boobs. You have boobs.
I do.
Almost spectacular boobs. Something. I mean, depending on the bra and the shirt.
Some days. Some days are better boob days than others.
Well, that's what you bring to the table.
Boob
days.
I bring the brains and the art.
But do you?
I bring my research skills, my knowledge.
Your enunciation.
My enunciation.
Your English.
The colonel brings his pedigree. And you bring boobs. So it's a good balance. All right. Before we get started into this topic, let me say special thank you to the folks who support our podcast. Believe it or not, there's people who actually support this podcast.
I know. I love them.
I do, too.
I love our listeners.
And we are very pleased that we have Patreon supporters because it keeps us on the air. So for those of you who would like to contribute to the show and support the arts, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/historydweebs. And there you can give a little, give a lot, or...
Just a wee tiny bit, Jimmy. Every
little bit helps. I want to thank those of you who support the podcast through Patreon. Those include Alicia and Chip. As always, they've been very generous. Jen Moyer, Brandy McBride, has been supporting us for a long time. Annette Petre. Annette sent me some soap, and it's...
Oh, she sent you soap?
Yes.
I got some body butter. Oh, my Lord.
Well, the thing is, it was good, right?
Nobody's pawed at you. No. Let's establish fabrication.
I got that stuff. I put some... First of all, you got soap? You didn't get the body butter?
He doesn't know what he got. He's talking to you.
I got soap, and I got some other stuff that I ordered. However... My mail slot where I work, where I live, not where I work, where I live, it's very small.
Mm-hmm.
And the fucking postal guy puts his box in there. There's no way I can get the son of a bitch out. I'm like, it's like 2 degrees yesterday. I'm out there in like 20 minutes trying to open this box so I can kind of rip it apart and get it out, but I still couldn't do it. So I have to see my management, the management office later just if I can get it out. But I'm looking forward to getting my soap.
It's,
I've got more problems. I mean, than Jay-Z.
Well, let me just tell you, I got mine, and I opened it up, and Renee said, "Oh, that smells really good," and it's this cream body butter.
It's body butter,
and it is so just. It's like thick but creamy.
Yeah. Were you basking in it?
Huh?
Were you basking in it? Basking?
Sure.
Oh, I wasn't going anywhere. I figured the rest of the night. So I just put a little bit on my wrists and on my arms and, mm-hmm. Just on my hands just so Renee could smell it. And then she,
She didn't do that at all.
She was like.
She didn't. I can already tell you she didn't.
You ever see the cartoon Pepe Le Pew? She was like Pepe Le Pew chasing me all over the house.
She was not like that.
She was all over you.
She was like that. Yeah, and then I finally told her, I was like, I got to go to the grocery store. I got stuff we got to get. You're going to have to just tone it down.
Well, see, that's what you get. So,
didn't happen.
We would encourage you to check out Obsessively Calm. That's the name of it.
Obsessively.
Obsessively Calm. She's got a lot of great products. And she's on our, if you join our Facebook page group, History Dweebs, the podcast, and Ed is on there, and we'll get you connected with her if you want some really cool products like that, soap and stuff, and body butter.
And if you listen to the show and you provide a service to the public or a product, feel free to post it on the page.
Absolutely.
I know Jamie Tarantino does drawings.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, she's very good.
She turns photographs into drawings.
I wish some hookers would come on our page.
You never know.
I would like to also thank, back to our Patreon supporters, Lise over in Norway. Lise, thank you very much. Leslie Hagar, thank you, Leslie. Very generous. Amber Scoville, thank you, Amber. Jahara, who I'm sorry your Miami Dolphins lost yesterday, but they had a great year. Thank you, Jahara. Andrew Happ, thank you, Andrew, for your support. Of course, Charlie and Allie from the Insight podcast, they support the show. Please check out their podcast. It's called Insight. It's a great podcast. Amber Trevino, thank you, Amber. Jason Dykes, thank you very much, Jason, for your support. Mandy Swanson, Jennifer Siemens, and her son Hunter, as well as her mother Linda, thank you very much. Very lovely, Bridget Clavey. Thank you, Bridget, for your support. Cindy Liu, of course, has been with us a long time. Thank you, Cindy. Heather Poole. Thank you, Heather. And then, of course, Rudy the Wonder Dog. Thank you all for your support. And if you would like to support the show, just go to patreon.com/historydweebs, and you can find out more information there. Thank you all very much. All right, you guys ready to talk about this story?
Let's go, Timmy. I'm ready. I'm ready to jump right into this story.
All right, the man who wouldn't die, the indestructible Michael Malloy.
It really sounds like we should be talking about you, Chuck.
Well,
really.
There's been a lot of plots against me.
Yeah, you're sort of like Rasputin.
One of these days, they will have my member in a jar showing it to people.
Well, really? No. Be a very small jar.
It'd be a big jar.
Like a thumb, thimble.
It'd be a mason jar. And it'll be folded over.
It'll be Tupperware.
In 1932, at the height of the Great Depression, you remember the Great Depression, girl?
I do. It was a terrible, terrible time. Almost lost my entire fortune.
Groucho Marx lost his fortune in the...
Did he?
Yeah, he regained it. But, I mean, he regained a lot of it, but he lost a bundle during the Depression. 1932, at the height of the Depression, a group of friends in New York City decided to overcome their financial woes by taking out multiple life insurance policy on a local drunk. The plan was to kill the poor elderly fellow. What's so funny about that? And collect the big payout. The problem became that their victim, a homeless alcoholic, just refused to die. The crime became known as the murder trust, and all of its participants would end up arrested and convicted of murder. So let's talk about this. We're going to talk about Michael Malloy. He was the intended victim. Michael Malloy was born on June 3rd, 1873, in County Donegal. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Donegal in Ireland. Yeah, Colonel, you have Irish roots. Do you know
that? I do have, but yeah, mine are all from Kilkenny.
Okay.
Well, those bastards. They killed Kenny.
And these folks this is a big area. This county is a big area. I looked it up on the map. He was the youngest of nine children born to his parents, Oliver and Mary Malloy. His father was a brick mason and worked hard to support his large family. You have nine kids, man. You've got to be working your ass off. When he wasn't working, Oliver could be found at the local pub drinking whiskey, like every good Irishman should be, right? Michael's childhood was a happy one, but it was full of hardships. The family was poor. Michael's parents had barely survived the Great Potato Famine of the mid-1800s. So this happened.
The Great Potato Famine?
Yeah, this happened. Yeah.
Was it a famine?
It was a phantom.
No, yeah. It was a phantom potato.
Was it?
Yeah, the Great Potato Famine.
I don't remember.
Like Mothman.
Did you send Scooby after it?
Yeah,
I'm so confused.
It kind of looked like Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah.
I'm so
only
confused.
Scarier.
Did you ever take Mr. Potato Head and do inappropriate things with it?
I did.
How come I'm not surprised at that?
I did. We used to take Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head. And
they had put in there like their mouth and their eyes.
Yeah, and you know what, though?
Except yeah, it was
the only thing
toy.
Difference between them was
I know what Mr. Potato Head is.
Mrs. Potato Head
well,
had
there are some of our younger listeners might not know.
Yeah, and she had big lips.
She didn't have boobs.
There was no potato vagina.
Yeah. Yeah, Brandy, why is that?
Yeah. How do we know she wasn't just
That's our question for you.
Cross-dressing Mr. Potato Head?
I think she was.
I don't know. I never thought about it.
She was a spud without a...
You know, Ken and Bobby, what you got between their legs, there wasn't no difference there either.
No.
You know, Renee has a nativity scene. I like to put the wise men in compromising position with the farm animals around there.
All right.
Especially the camels.
All right. Don't talk anymore. So his family had survived. And the County Donegal, where this is, I know I'm pronouncing this wrong, so some of our British or some of our Irish listeners can straighten me out. Was one of the worst affected parts of Ireland during the Great Famine of the 1840s.
Famine.
Yeah,
famine. There's some scary shit over there.
If you run up a potato,
shit would fly off the counters. Yeah. French fries would appear from nowhere.
Have you ever lived through a famine before?
Not a potato famine. No, I had a carrot ghost come after me once.
Ooh, those are the worst.
Yeah, but not a potato famine.
Anyway, his parents survived that, okay? He was sturdy people.
They were hardy stock.
They were. Vast numbers of the people in that county immigrated during the famine.
Are you fucking kidding me?
But having no opportunities to leave, the Malloys stayed in Ireland.
You know, we don't typically do it, but I know Allie and Charlie do a lot of unsolved things. Maybe they could do the Great Irish Potato Famine.
Potato Famine.
Yeah.
I think so. I think that's. I think it's a case
guys,
they need to solve.
Just wait till you guys are up.
Potato chips flying everywhere.
They look for better opportunities
fucking
for
horrible.
Their children.
Oh, the horror.
This is sad. This is kind of
all the humanity.
In 1888. Well, you know, if all you've got to eat is potatoes and all of a sudden there's no goddamn potatoes, life's pretty rough.
It's a phantom.
You eating phantom stew.
Yeah, you are. Which I figured that out when my mom served it about the third time. Yeah. It's just broth.
It's just water and rocks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. In 1888, when Michael was 15 years old, scarlet fever spread throughout the county.
Oh, no.
His mother and two sisters succumbed. That means they died, Brandy.
Please.
Out to the fever.
Potato phantom. Let's not.
Sometimes we have to dumb it down for her.
Yeah. No, yeah. Let's not.
So his mother and two sisters died from the fever. Now, Michael also was very ill from scarlet fever, and he was at death's door, Brandy.
I didn't know
Did
that.
The potato phantom meet him there? Yeah.
The local priest.
The grim tater?
The local priest administered the last rites on Michael and waited for him to die. Poor Michael.
This is Michael Malloy.
Michael Malloy, 15 years old. Already lost his mother and two sisters to scarlet fever, and now he is at death's door.
His father was at the priest's door.
His father, Oliver, who had already buried his wife and two daughters, was in the woodshed working. It sounds bad. He was in the woodshed working on Michael's coffin. When, oh. Well, I mean, that was
preemptive.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
he
could see which way the wind was blowing.
Well, clearly not.
When all of a sudden, Michael popped in to see what he was doing.
He said, get the fuck
Sup?
Out of here. Get the fuck
it was a
out
potato
of
phantom.
Here with that scarlet fever.
It's a potato phantom.
Yeah. That's what I'd be taking.
Michael pops in and says, sup.
Oliver was shocked. Not only was Michael out of his deathbed, but he was also looking healthy as ever.
There you go.
Although Oliver was relieved, his youngest son had amazingly survived this illness. He took the loss of his wife and two daughters very hard and began spending more and more time drinking at the local pub. Michael dropped out of school and took a job on the docks to help support his family. In 1890, when Michael was 17 years old, he was helping to unload crates of coal on a ship when the ropes gave way and the crate crashed onto the deck.
That sucks.
Ooh.
The 2-ton crate landed right on top of Michael. It's not funny at all.
This son of a bitch like the Roadrunner.
Everyone on the dock rushed to his aid, certain that he was dead. But a few minutes later, Michael emerged from the rubble, covered in coal dust.
Just dust himself off and move the fuck on.
Now, he suffered some minor bruises and lacerations, but besides that, he was just fine and returned to work the next day. So he's a tough guy, a tough kid. Michael's father was stricken with tuberculosis in early 1891.
The consumption?
The consumption.
Oh, no,
not the consumption.
Michael, being a loyal son, stayed by his father's side throughout his illness. Despite Michael's attention and prayers, his father died in early fall of 1891. His father's funeral was held on a cold, gray November day. His father was buried in the coffin that he had built for Michael when Michael had scarlet fever.
Teach his ass.
Well, okay, you know, it didn't go to waste.
At least anyway. Michael didn't have to build one.
While at the funeral, stricken with grief, in the cold, brisk, damp air, Colonel Michael began to cough.
Oh, no. He was getting a consumption, too, Timmy.
While the priest was praying over his father's coffin, Michael glanced down into his handkerchief and spotted droplets of blood. Still grieving his father's death, Michael visited the town doctor the next day, and he confirmed Michael's worst fear. Michael had contracted tuberculosis, which is
the consumption.
The doctor suggested that the 19-year-old Michael get his affairs in order. So, you know, back then, Colonel, it was lights out usually when you got to
school. Yeah, but he didn't have no affairs to put in order. What was he going to
do? Well, I mean, he had younger brothers.
He had affairs.
Yeah, he had brothers and sisters, and he had to build a coffin.
Well, he did have to build a coffin. And that's a bitch because you're all weak with the consumption.
Yeah. Yeah. So, at this time, Michael had been engaged to a local girl named Kathleen. She's probably redhead, Colonel.
Oh, I'm sure she was. You know what? And I bet she bitched at him for getting a consumption. She was
No. They had been courting for a year, and the plan was for them to get married and start a family the following year. But now, due to his illness, Michael called off the wedding. The couple was heartbroken, but Michael did not want Kathleen to become a widowed bride. Kathleen insisted on sticking by him, but Michael did not want to risk Kathleen's health by her catching the consumption like he had from his father. So he's honorable, Colonel. You can respect that. Now, Michael, to protect his family, Michael isolated himself in a small one-room house near the sea to spend out the final days of his short life. Each day, when he was well enough, he would take a small boat out to sea and catch fish to eat. There were many days, though, when he could not get out of bed, and he just waited around to die, basically.
He was waiting for the knock on the door from the potato phantom.
The Grim Reaper. That's right. Well, days turned into weeks, and weeks turned into months.
And it appeared that he might not have the consumption.
Although
at all.
There was times when Michael was very sick and weak, he slowly started to feel stronger. After 3 months of isolation, feeling better, Michael walked into the village once again to visit the town doctor. People who saw him walk into town,
dude, probably went the other fucking way.
Yeah,
thought that they were looking at a ghost. Everyone had just assumed that he went somewhere and died. People kind of assume that about me sometimes, too.
No, that's more hopeful.
We assume that about you every weekend.
You're surprised.
Me too, yeah. Actually.
Every Monday we see you, we're kind of surprised by it.
Damn. You thought I'd be taken out by the weekend. His doctor was astonished that after once again he when examining Michael, he found that he was completely disease-free, Colonel.
Yep.
He had somehow miraculously defeated the consumption.
It's the fish. You got to eat a lot of fish when you got the consumption, Timmy.
Do you really?
It's got a lot of mercury in it. Mm-hmm.
And that defeats the consumption.
It does.
Michael, now ecstatic, rushed to Kathleen's home to share the great news with the love of his life, only to learn that Kathleen, thinking that Michael was gone forever, had gotten married to someone else and moved to London.
Hmm. Oh, that redheaded whore.
Yeah, well.
You know what?
She didn't know.
I mean, she could have waited. Yeah. She could have waited. If it was true love, she would have waited.
Well, you know, you didn't live long back in those days. You couldn't, you know. You had to jump on any opportunity you can.
Yeah, she was probably short and frumpy.
Don't know that. Heartbroken, Michael went back to work on the docks, vowing never to marry, and he never would. Randy, you want to pick up Michael Malloy's story from there?
So he'll never marry because he didn't die.
He will never marry because his heart was broken.
Oh, jeez. Well, maybe he'll have a vision.
Let's see if his luck gets better here.
I don't think it does, but all right. In 1897, when Michael was 24, a major fire broke out on the docks. 4 people died and 100 head of cattle also perished.
That's a lot of beef.
Yep.
Now they have cow phantoms. Michael was badly burned in the blaze, but despite suffering third-degree burns over 90% of his body, he survived.
Third-degree burns over 90% of his body.
Yep.
What if his junk was protected?
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because I just want a woman's perspective on this.
That's why he's asking you, Brandy.
Yeah. if a guy had some burn up junk, but it still worked. You know, it was still able to solidify itself.
But there was some scar tissue.
Would you consider the scar tissue ribbed for her pleasure?
See, it's a stupid question.
No, it's. I
refuse
it's a
to answer
question.
That stupid question.
Well, retract that question. Let me pose one.
He even said it was a stupid question.
Would you still be open to intercourse
fornication
with the young man of a burnt penis? Nothing worse than a burnt penis, girl.
A burnt wiener is just a bad scene.
Would you take a smoked Woody?
Probably.
The Colonel is the face of burnt penises.
How am I the face of that? I'm not. I can't be the face
and
of everything.
And rotten vagina.
Yeah.
Decayed vagina.
Whatever.
Well, there's a difference between rotten vagina and decaying vagina. It's subtle. It's a subtle difference. It's subtle.
You can fix rotten vagina.
But there is a line. There is a line.
All right. So Michael survived. In early 1900, Michael had an uncle who was immigrating to the United States. Michael wanted to follow, but was afraid of the fact that he had been earlier diagnosed with TB, and he was afraid that would prevent him from passing through U.S. immigration.
You bet it would.
Well, if he comes up through Mexico, probably not.
Well,
he's got to get past that wall.
Yeah.
Well. But, you know, the only way TB would affect him is he can't run as fast. Yeah.
My ex-father-in-law had TB when he was younger, and they immigrated from Cambodia, and it almost kept them out. So, you know, and this was in the 70s, so this is when tuberculosis was a much bigger problem, so I could see that keeping him out.
Well,
my stepdad lived down in, now it's a true story, my stepdad lived down in the mountains of Tennessee. He lost his older brother, his dad, his sister. His mom got the consumption. They put him in an orphanage. He got the consumption. They sent him up here, you know, Dunham.
Yeah.
It used to be an asylum.
Sanitarium.
Sanitarium. Yeah. He spent 18 months in there.
My dad lied to get he lied about his age to get into the army,
mm-hmm.
and they did a chest mm-hmm. X-rays, and they found a spot, and he had TB, and they weren't going to let him in, and they sent him to the hospital, but turned out it was just a bad.
Now see, when I was a kid, I had a reaction to all the TB shots they would give you, and then every time I'd have to go get chest X-rays, and it turns out that people in my family had TB, and I've been exposed to it, so I had
I used to work in a building that was also on the different side of the building was a TB clinic.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So I was always worried about getting to consumption.
It's amazing. Of course you were.
Mm-hmm.
Proceed.
But his father's brother, who was a successful merchant, was able to pull some strings, and in March 1900, Michael Malloy arrived in Ellis Island. Michael quickly connected.
Ellis Island is a place where immigrants go to when they first arrive to the United States, Brandy.
Mm-hmm. They used to let people in through there. It's by the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
Give me your warm.
Potato
your
phantom.
Give me your tattered, your ugly, your broken down.
Frumpy.
Grumpy, yeah.
Frumpy.
Grumpy.
Yeah.
Michael quickly.
Burnt penis.
Michael quickly connected with the Irish immigrants in Lower Manhattan. He also quickly found work at the docks, earning enough to feed himself and pay his uncle back for the cost of his voyage. Michael made many friends on the dock. There were people from many different backgrounds, immigrants from Ireland, Germany, and Italy, and Michael got along with them all. So he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
When he wasn't working, he could be found at the local saloon drinking with his buddies.
Yeah, good Irishman.
His friends were anxious for Michael to take a bride. What the fuck do they care?
Because they're miserable. They want everyone else miserable.
When they tried to introduce him to women, Michael would make some excuse. He kept a picture of his beloved Kathleen in the timepiece he always carried. Michael started to miss his home in Ireland. Although he had a good job and many new friends in New York, he really longed for the land of his youth. In 1908, Michael was offered the opportunity of a lifetime. A good friend named Tommy had offered Michael a chance to return to Ireland and work as a shipbuilder for Harland and Wolff in Belfast. The company was in the process of building the greatest passenger liner ever built for the most famous passenger shipping company in the world, the White Star Line.
Oh, you know where this is
that
going?
That will be...
Yeah, go ahead, Brandy.
The Titanic.
Yeah. It's probably in here somewhere.
The White Star Line. Yeah, no. I know. It comes
I fucking
from
know.
Star
I've
Line.
Seen the movie.
I haven't seen the movie. I've
well, that's
seen
your
the
fault.
Movie.
Let's see.
What
the project
fuck
would last.
To see the movie for? I know how it ends.
The project would last. Well, she didn't make room on the door for the boy to get on, for Jack to get on, and then Jack drowned. And all because she was selfish about fucking hoarding the door.
Well,
it was bullshit.
She was a redhead, Colonel.
She was a redhead, and she was going to freeze to death. And he was going to freeze to death anyway.
Would you bang
he
Rose?
He might not have if he'd let
would
him
you bang
on the door.
Rose?
Was that Minnie Driver?
No, it was Kate Winslet.
Oh, yeah, I bang her.
I mean, if she'd have just scooted her ass over a little bit, he could have fit on the door.
Continue.
Oh, yeah, but they would have still froze to death.
All right, well, so he gets, this opportunity.
Maybe, but you know what? If she'd have just moved over a little bit, he could have got on there with it. Then they could have froze together. As it turns out, he freezes in the water, and then she pries his, like, fucking cold, dead kung fu grip off, and he sinks to the bottom
I
of
mean,
the
what
sea.
I mean,
well, he banged
it was
her.
Bullshit.
He banged her in the car on the ship. After he banged her, I would have let her go.
Yeah,
Colonel.
She was.
I would change my number, blocked her.
He seen what was coming. He'd rather drown.
Yeah,
I guess. I guess. The project would last 3 years, and the best part, once the ship was complete, Michael would be hired to work as a laborer on the deck. That meant an opportunity to travel the world, and it was perfect for a young single man like Michael. 2 days before Michael was set to leave for Belfast with his friend Tommy, Michael was diagnosed with typhoid.
Oh, no, not the typhoid.
He's sick gone. In bed with a fever of 103, Michael sent word to his friend Tommy that he was unable to make the long voyage, and even if he could, his illness would spread and kill the whole crew by the time they made it to Belfast. Once again, Michael waited to die, only this time his fever subsided in 3 days. Again, he regained his strength, and after a quick doctor's visit confirmed he was no longer contagious, Michael went back to work at the docks.
It reminds Michael, me of the time I had strep throat.
It doesn't.
And I just laid in bed, Timmy, waiting to die.
You had a man cold?
It was serious.
Because you're a puss.
I had strep throat, and I broke out in a rash all over my body.
Yeah, it happens.
With a strep throat?
Yes.
It was.
You're not the first or only person to get strep throat.
But it was 4 days before I was getting married.
Little kids get strep throat and they survive.
I laid in bed. I really was waiting for the Grim Reaper to come and take
me. For the Lord to come and take you, sure.
I made my peace with myself. I put my affairs in order. And I get better. I'm like him.
I had the same. I felt the same way when I had mono. Mono would feel like you want to die. It's awful.
All right. So Michael went back to work.
I had a sinus infection. It was really bad, too.
I had cramps one time. It was a bitch.
Oh, now see, why you got to bring vulgarity into this, devil?
No wonder people think this is a vulgar
thing. Yeah. That's why cramps. We got the E all of a sudden. We got the explicit because you got to talk about your vaginal problems.
I meant
disorders.
Stomach cramps, but okay, whatever, you dirty
oh,
mind.
Oh, now stomach cramps. Now you're talking about your fecal disorder matters.
Doesn't matter what kind of cramps. I said cramps.
Well, it's either your colon or your vagina. Either way, we're not interested. Please
yeah,
move on.
Just please continue.
Oh, but please tell me about the sinus infection that you got 3 days ago. Or please tell me about the time you looked on WebMD and were convinced that you were getting ready to drop dead of, what was it, like leprosy or Ebola or SARS?
No, I had this
sinus, SARS, right?
I had sinus infection. Oh, no. What was that? Zika.
Zika.
That explains your encephalopathy.
Well, you've been in trouble if I had Zika because you probably got it.
Mm-hmm. He'd have passed it.
Explains
on to
your
you.
Little shrunken head and your
Zika's some serious shit.
No, well, I know.
That's why so I didn't sinus, go to the Olympics.
So is sinus infection.
I did not go to. I told him no. I'm not playing on that volleyball team this year. They wanted me to play on the men's volleyball team. I told them no.
No, they didn't.
And then I was supposed to do the 3 meter diving.
You're a little old. You're a little long in the tooth to be thinking about the Olympics.
Wow, that's hurtful. Yeah.
Michael wrote his friend Tommy to let him know that he was now well enough to travel, but they already had all of the labor that they needed. But Tommy was able to pull some strings and get Michael a job with the White Star Line as an able seaman.
Well, it's better than a disabled seaman.
Yeah. Once the grand new ship was complete. There was no need for Michael to make an expensive journey to Liverpool, the new ship's home port, since the ship's maiden voyage would be to New York. Tommy instructed Michael just to sit tight and report to the chief purser once the ship arrived in New York.
You ever known a purser?
No.
Isn't Nancy a purser?
She might be a purser.
Yeah. Yeah.
On April 10th, 1912, do you know what a purser is?
Yeah, someone carries a purse.
Yes, sure. Nailed it. Nailed it. On April 10th, 1912, that ship, the RMS Titanic, sank in the North Atlantic on its maiden voyage to New York.
All right, so he dodged another bullet.
Yeah, luckily Tommy wasn't on that.
More than 1,500 people died in the tragedy, including Abel Seaman and Michael's friend named William Thomas Tommy Jones.
Yeah, I was making sure that wasn't bullshit, so I looked up. You can look up a roster of people. When he was on there, he was listed as one of the guys that died.
Michael's, you know, seamen are one of the first things to go down.
Well, they, you know, the thing about seamen is
they're awfully salty and in a bad mood. Let's see. Michael spent the next several years working on the docks in New York. His spare time was spent drinking with friends. He never married. In 1923, Michael took a job with the New York Fire Department. He worked, well, since he was already burned up.
NYFD. Yes. He probably had one of his caps, Carl.
He worked as a fireman for 6 years before being injured on the job and forced to retire in 1929.
What happened in 1929, Colonel?
The crash of the stock market. Yep. Wall Street, Black Monday.
Mm-hmm. Unable to work.
Or Black Friday,
just a
was
small...
it? What was it?
Black Friday. No, I think it's Black Monday. Was it Monday?
Was it Black Friday? Is the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's when you buy stuff.
Yeah. In 1929, missed a sentence. Unable to work, and with just a small pension coming in, Michael started to drink more heavily. In 1929, the stock market crashed and unemployment in the United States reached 25%. So he was migrating between flop houses. He spent most of his time drinking to ease the pain of the back injury he suffered as a fireman and from all those years lifting heavy loads on the dock. In 1932, at the age of 59, Michael Malloy was just another homeless wino on the streets of New York.
Wino? Now that's a little harsh.
That's what I'm reading what's written.
No, you don't need to editorialize about the people now. He's just a homeless man. He was an unfortunate wino.
I mean, he was just one of the millions caught up in the Great Depression.
You know, when you think about 25% unemployment, that means 3 out of 4 people had jobs.
Well, but, you know, again, that's how you count unemployment.
I would have mocked so people. If I had a job, I'd have been going there. Well, like, what you doing, you lazy?
No, I was reading this book on the Great Depression, and this guy who ran a haberdashery, you know, sold men's clothes in Manhattan.
Haberdashery is like hats and fine articles for men.
Yeah, I already knew that. Anyway, okay. And when the stock market crashed, his customers were then, and he was joking. And he was saying, all these big shots now on Wall Street. You know, they were always big shots. Now they're all out of work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2 months later,
his haberdashery closed because his customers were exactly the big streets on Wall Street.
Yeah, so.
All right, so he's another homeless wino because Timmy makes judgment calls. With Prohibition now in place, what little money Michael had was spent often on dangerous homemade hooch or his favorite speakeasy in the Lower East Side, a bar called Marino's.
Yeah, because back in the day, I think you can get into this, but.
Probably.
I won't say anything.
I would have been a gangster.
But you know that a lot of that hooch was
damn,
bad.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
A lot of that whiskey was bad that they were selling.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
The bathtub gin and the whiskey make you blind?
Well, and the government put out bad whiskey to enforce prohibition.
Okay, so there was a plot conceived. There was a plot afoot.
But you could go to Walgreens and get the good kind.
Mm-hmm.
Over a round of drinks. One afternoon in July of 1932, friends were gathered at Marino's speakeasy in New York City. The speakeasy boss, Tony Marino, if there ever was a gangster's name, that is it.
What if he was in relation to Dan Marino?
Probably. And well, several Tony of Montana. His friends were playing an idle game of pinochle, drinking some bootleg whiskey. All of them were worried over money and the Depression's hard times. Pinochle's a card game that has a lot of fucking cards, and it's very confusing and convoluted.
Did you, Colonel, when you was a kid, did you ever play Flip Knuckle?
Yeah,
we played Flip Knuckle. It's a card game. If you lose, you'd have to the winner would take the cards and hit your knuckles with them.
Oh no, we used to not take the cards. We used to use our hands and hit the knuckles.
Oh yeah, we used to take the cards, and I mean, if you lost more than a couple hands, your whole hand would swell up.
Yeah, no, we would hit. Bang on the knuckles with our own.
You ever play strip solitaire?
You ever play?
Yeah, I have, actually.
You ever played two for flinching? You want to play it now?
What is it?
Two for flinching.
No.
Really?
No, no. What is it?
You seriously never done this?
No. All right. Wait a minute. The people cannot see this.
Okay. Well, hold on.
All right. So Brandy's putting her hands out.
No, hold your hands out just like that.
Oh, and then she.
Two for flinching.
She hits him for blinking. Okay, that's a really fascinating game.
She just
I did
an
excellent.
She punched me in the face.
I did. Well,
how
I
have
just
you
want
never
to
done
out,
two for flinching?
I want to point out, I did an excellent play-by-play.
Yeah. You're I was not expecting.
I sound like Howard Corsell.
No, I sound like Marv Albert.
Marv Albert, please don't bite me. Or Chuck.
Tie me up and bite me, Timmy.
God. Okay, so
back to Michael Malloy.
So they're all worried about the profession. You're gonna bruise.
I know. I got that old man skin.
I know. You're gonna bruise. Your arm might fall
put
off.
Put some of that body butter on it.
Well, I got some plans all for
right.
body butter.
So all these dipshits are sitting around chit-chatting. There was 27-year-old Anthony Marino, proprietor of Marino Speakeasy, and a snappy dresser. I don't know why that's in there, but
I want to pay a picture.
Well, there's 28-year-old Joseph Murphy, a one-time chemist who was now Marino's bartender. There was 24-year-old Francis Pesqua, a newlywed and an undertaker who owned a funeral parlor on East 107th Street.
All right. Businessman.
There was Hershey or Harry Green, a taxi cab driver. And there was 29-year-old Daniel Kreisberg, the father of three and a fruit vendor.
Now, that sounds Kreisberg. Now, doesn't that sound like a contradictory name? Because it sounds Jewish, but if he was Jewish.
Not Kreisberg, Kreis.
Oh, never mind.
Okay. All of them had many problems, and with the Great Depression in full swing, they were short on solutions. If only one of them had a wealthy relative, or barring that, a sick one with a good insurance policy. You know, haven't we all sat around and had those conversations,
yeah,
really?
Yeah.
The right kind of dead family member would come in really handy right now.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Too bad none of them had any expendable relatives, but perhaps, Marino suggested, they could create one. Someone no one would miss, someone hardly worth keeping alive anyway. These are some humanitarians right here. This clearly was a Mensa meeting.
this is like clearly. The show Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, exactly.
And this guy's Charlie.
Right. All right. So Francis Pesqua, Daniel Kreisberg, and Tony Marino sat in the speakeasy and raised their glasses, sealing their complicity figuring the job was already half finished. So evidently they'd settled on Michael Malloy at some point during this conversation. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how difficult could it be to push Michael Malloy to drink himself to death?
Yeah.
Every morning the old man showed up at Marino's place in the Bronx and requested another morning's morning, if you don't mind. In a drunken stupor, hours later he would pass out on the floor.
Yes.
For a while, Marino let Malloy drink on credit, but he could no longer pay his tabs. Business, the salon keeper confided to Pesqua and Kreisberg, is bad. Pesqua, the 24-year-old undertaker by trade, eyed Malloy's sloping figure, the glass of whiskey hoisted to his slack mouth. No one knew much about him.
I like that. That's for a phrase.
Slack jaw. He was a slack jaw?
He was a slack jaw drunk, evidently. No one knew much about him, not even, it seemed, Malloy himself, other than that he'd come from Ireland. So Malloy didn't seem to know much about himself.
He's never talked about himself.
Well, he had no friends, no family, no definitive birthday. They guessed him about 60. No apparent trade or vocation beyond the occasional odd job sweeping alleys or collecting garbage. And happy to be paid in alcohol instead of money. Well, aren't we all?
Yes.
Why don't you take out insurance on Malloy? Pesqua asked Marina that day. I can take care of the rest. I've always said we should have undertaker friends. I've always said that.
Yeah. You can't have too many undertaker friends.
I don't think so. Marino paused. Pesqua knew he'd pulled off such a scheme once before. The prior year, Marino, 27, had befriended a homeless woman named Maybell Carson and convinced her to take out a $2,000 life insurance policy, naming him as the beneficiary.
Yeah, why would you do that, Colonel? I mean, if someone asks to name, you know, that they want to take out a life insurance, wouldn't that raise a red flag for you?
I don't know. The devil asked me the other day to sign some papers. I'm not really sure what I was signing.
Those were fine.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry those about are good. You don't.
I think about this podcast.
Don't think another thing about it.
Yeah, don't think another thing about it. Let's see. So he's got this woman that he convinced her to take out $2,000 life insurance policy. Then one frigid night, he force-fed her alcohol, stripped off her clothing, doused the sheets and the mattress with ice water, and then pushed the bed beneath an open window. So I take it she was passed out, and he just put her on it. That's so mean. The medical examiner listed the cause of death as bronchial pneumonia, and Marino collected the money without incident. Marino nodded and motioned to Malloy. He looks all in. He ain't got much longer to go anyhow. The stuff's getting him.
Well, he knew he was probably going to die any time. Yeah.
Look at Chuck. He's all in. He's all in. He's already signed the paperwork. Look at it.
Drinking a hooch. Go ahead.
You think you're not, but okay.
Yeah.
All right. So he and Pesqua glanced over at Daniel Kreisberg. The 29-year-old grocer and father of three would later say he participated for the sake of his family. He nodded, and the gang set in motion a macabre chain of events that would earn Michael Malloy cult immortality by proving him nearly immortal. It took Pesqua five months and a connection with an unscrupulous agent to secure three policies, all offering double indemnity on Michael Malloy's life, two through Prudential Life Insurance Company and one with Metropolitan Life Insurance Company.
They're still around.
Mm-hmm. Pesqua tried to buy a $3,000 policy on Malloy that named the undertaker's beneficiary, but Metropolitan Life turned him down because he wasn't kin to him. So he recruited Joseph Murphy, a bartender at Marino's, to pose as Malloy's brother. Excuse me. And the men took out an $800 policy from MetLife and two others for $494 each from Prudential. If all went as planned, Pesqua and his cohorts would split $1,294.
Yeah.
That's about $36,000 in today's dollars.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad. That wouldn't be a bad haul.
After
you ain't got no job and it's the Depression.
Ain't got no job.
You ain't got shit to do.
I don't think you're looking for a job.
You just sit around standing on the corners, leaning up against the post.
But I was tired.
All right, so.
It's the best song ever.
Oh, I hate that song. The Murder Trust, as the press would call them, clearly Brain Trust, Murder Trust.
Yeah, I don't think brain trust has been appropriate.
Now included a few other Marino's regulars, including petty criminals John McNally and Edward Ten Ear Smith.
Ten Ear Smith.
Well, he was called that because he had an artificial ear that was made of wax. That was made of wax, not tin. So why wouldn't you call him wax ear? Whatever.
How would you keep it on?
Well, in the summertime, wouldn't it melt?
You'd think you can't get too close to a flame. I
can't. So and would you get earwax in a waxy ear?
Here's the other thing.
I don't want no wax penis. That's what I don't want to have.
Well, here's
that's
the thing,
fucked
though.
Up. You get a wax penis.
They're bringing
it's
every
like a candle.
They're bringing every swinging dick that comes in that bar. They're yeah, putting they, them all yeah, in on this. Yeah. So now they're going to have to split this $1,300. Like
they're going to have each get five bucks or something.
Yeah,
$3.58.
Jesus God. So good old Ten Ear is in it. Tough Tony Bastone and his slavish sidekick Joseph Maglione.
You like the verbiage I use?
I was gonna say you did all. I can put it, picture him in my mind. This slobbish sidekick, like Jabba the Hutt in a suit.
Seriously, so one night
I'm free with the adjectives.
You're free with so much. One night, December 1932, they all gathered at the speakeasy to commence the killing of Michael Malloy. To Michael's undisguised delight, Tony Marino granted him an open tab. Saying competition from other saloons had forced him to ease the rules.
Yeah, we got a lot of competition, so we're gonna get
free drinks. And he just went with it. I mean, you know,
it doesn't seem like it's a good idea, but
yeah, but you know what? You don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Yeah,
that's true.
So no sooner did Michael down a shot than Marino refilled his glass. Malloy had been a hard drinker all his life, one waitress said, and he just kept on drinking on and on. Michael drank until Marino's arm tired from holding the bottle. Remarkably, his breathing remained steady, and his skin retained its normal ruddy rouge tinge.
Hmm. Ruddy.
But, you know what ruddy means.
Tim's turning into Poe over here.
Oh, I know. He's a fucking turn of phrase, telling you. Walt fucking Whitman sitting over there. Finally, he dragged a grungy sleeve across his mouth, thanks to his host for the hospitality, and said he'd be back soon. And within 24 hours, he was. Fucking open tab.
He brought a friend.
For 3 days, he did this.
It's open bar. I mean, fuck.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Why would you go home, really?
For 3 days he did this, pausing only long enough to eat the ever complimentary sardine sandwich.
Yeah. You ever had your sardine sandwich?
No.
I'll tell you what, man, his breath must have been horrible.
So Marino and his accomplices were at a loss.
Now, you know,
what the fuck?
We spent a little time talking about, you know, the problems of decaying vagina.
All right.
But just a quick thought, devil. What do you think his nutsack was?
God. All right. So this guy and all his accomplices, they're flabbergasted. Maybe they hoped Michael would choke on his own vomit or fall down and slam his head.
Well, it happens.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Fucking Mama Cass can die from a ham sandwich.
Ham sandwich.
You know, I've wished that a couple times. I just wish they'd choke on her own vomit. But on the fourth day, Malloy stumbled into the bar. Boy, he exclaimed, nodding at Marino, ain't I got a thirst. No, in the meantime, this fucker's giving him all these free fucking drinks and going in the hole. He's not going to get shit with his $32 that he's going to end up with. He's not going to be able to bail himself out. All right.
It's a lot of competition. So
Tough Tony grew impatient. Yeah, he does that.
I can understand that.
Suggesting someone just shoot him in the head. Let's see. But Murphy.
Hey, I got a better idea. Instead of giving free drinks, I'm going to shoot the motherfucker in the head.
Yeah, just shoot him. Nobody will suspect a thing. Murphy recommended a more subtle solution. Let's exchange Mallory's whiskey and gin with shots of wood alcohol.
Ooh, ooh, that's some nasty shit right there.
Well, the question is he really going to notice?
Yeah, that's true.
Let's see. So drinks containing just 4% wood alcohol can cause blindness.
It's like excessive masturbation.
Yeah, as can many things. Let's see. And by 1929, more than 50,000 people nationwide had died from the effects of impure alcohol.
Devil's brew.
So they wouldn't, I mean, no one would have suspected anything.
Right. During Prohibition, the U.S. government discouraged drinking bootleg liquor by contaminating the alcohol supply, killing thousands of people.
That's very fucked up, man. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. So if it's bootleg, how does the government even have anything to do with it?
They put it in circulation so that it discouraged people from buying bootleg whiskey. And people would buy it and drink it and they'd die.
Jesus.
They thought they were getting bootleg, but they were getting government alcohol that was poison.
Yeah.
Should Malloy die of bad alcohol, he'd just be one of thousands, and his death would not arouse any suspicion. The crew would serve Malloy not shots tainted with wood alcohol, but wood alcohol straight up.
Give me wood alcohol.
Tony said, "There ain't putting no more of my good shit, my top shelf shit in here."
Shaken, not stirred.
Marino thought it was a brilliant plan, declaring he would give all of the drink he wanted and let him drink himself to death.
You get no top shelf shit anymore.
Kreisberg allowed a rare display of enthusiasm. What a fucking bootlick. This motherfucker here, like the little yappy chihuahua.
Yappy chihuahua.
He's back there going, yeah, boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Feed him wood alcohol cocktails and see what happens. Yeah, boss. What a douche. All right. He started serving Michael shots of cheap whiskey to get him feeling good. Then they made the switch.
Ah, so they did old bait switch. They gave him some real alcohol.
They did. All right. Fucker. So the gang watched as Michael downed several shots and kept asking for more, displaying no physical symptoms other than those of typical inebriation. Well, he's Irish, you stupid fucks. Yeah. He didn't know that what he was drinking was wood alcohol, and what he didn't know apparently didn't hurt him. He drank all the wood alcohol he was given and came back for more. Night after night, the scene repeated itself, with Michael drinking shots of wood alcohol as fast as Murphy poured them, until the night he crumpled to the floor without warning.
Oh.
The gang fell silent,
Woo-hoo. Staring
at the jumbled heap by their feet. Francis Pesqua knelt by Malloy's body, feeling the neck for a pulse, lowering his ear to the mouth. Oof, that's a little too close.
Especially if someone had been eating this sardine sandwiches.
Well, they got to feed him. This is crazy. They couldn't get to a White Castle. The man's breath was slow and labored. They decided to wait, watching the sluggish rise and fall of his chest. Any minute now.
So he's like in hospice right now.
Finally, there was a long, jagged breath. Could it be a death rattle? But then Malloy began to snore. He awakened some hours later, rubbed his eyes, and said, "Give me the old regular, me lad."
Now this plot to kill Michael, it was becoming cost prohibitive.
I would think.
And they got to pay the premiums on these fucking insurance.
Well, you had the open bar tab, you had the cans of wood alcohol, and the monthly insurance premiums.
Not even mentioned the sardine sandwiches.
Well, we're getting to that too.
Shit ain't free.
Marino was afraid to speak easy. He was about to go bankrupt. So Tough Tony advocated using brute force.
Still wanting to shoot him in the face.
Yeah, boss. Yeah.
Pesqua had another idea. Michael Malloy had a well-known taste for seafood.
Clearly, sardines.
He's Irish.
Why not drop some oysters?
Ooh.
And denatured alcohol. Oh. Let them soak for a few days. Serve them while Malloy imbibed.
Oh.
The idea apparently came from Pesqua, who saw a man die after eating oysters with whiskey.
Yeah.
Alcohol taking during a meal of oysters, Pesqua was quoted as saying, will almost invariably cause acute indigestion, for the oysters tend to remain preserved.
It's going to cause him indigestion? Who the fuck cares?
It's cause you alcohol poisoning. As planned, Malloy ate them one by one, savoring each bite, and washed them down with wood alcohol. Marino, Pasquale, and the rest played pinochle and waited, but Malloy merely licked his fingers and belched.
You know what? That is a gentleman.
Now, at this point...
some good damn oysters there.
You know
at
that's
this
right.
point, killing him was a point of pride as much as payoff.
Now they're just pissed.
A payoff they all griped would have to be split among too many co-conspirators.
Exactly.
Now, Murphy had another plan. He let a tin of sardines rot for several days.
Oh, my God.
Mixed in some shrapnel...
Jesus Christ.
Slathered the concoction between pieces of bread and served Malloy the sandwich. Any minute he thought the metal would start slashing through his organs. But instead, Malloy finished his sandwich and asked for another. The gang called an emergency
that was pretty good.
conference.
Can they, I have another one, please?
They did not know what to make of the Rasputin of the Bronx.
And along with that sardine shrapnel sandwich, can I have another glass of that with alcohol?
You got more oysters back there. Now, Marino recalled his success with Mabel Carlson and suggested they ice Malloy down and leave his ass outside overnight. So it was January 15th in 33. The temperature in New York City was a frigid 12 degrees. Fridge. I like the way you added
That's about like it is today.
Yeah. That evening after Malloy had once again passed out from drinking wood alcohol, Marino and Pasquale tossed Malloy into the back seat of his Pasquale's roadster.
Oh, they Pasquale drove was a sharp dresser and he had a roadster.
He had a roadster.
You know he was getting some tail.
Wow. That's what ZZ Top song is based on this deck, this guy.
So they drove him to Crotona Park and lugged the unconscious man through heaps of snow. After depositing him on a park bench, they stripped off his shirt and dumped bottles of water on his chest and head.
Jesus Christ.
Man, that's just cold.
Malloy never stirred. When Marino arrived at his speakeasy the following day, he found Malloy's half-frozen form in the basement. Somehow, Malloy had trekked the half mile back... and persuaded Murphy to let him in.
And he's naked?
He just was missing his shirt.
Jesus.
When he came to, he complained of a wee chill.
That's a wee chilly out there.
February neared, another insurance payment was due. One of the gang, John McNally, wanted to run Malloy over with a car. Tinia Smith was skeptical, but Marino, Pasquale, Murphy, and Kreisberg were intrigued.
Like, let's step this thing up a little bit.
John Magnolone offered the services of a cab driver friend named Harry Green, whose cut from the insurance money would total $150. They totaled into Green's cab, a drunken Malloy strewn across their feet. Green drove a few blocks and stopped. Bastone and Murphy dragged Malloy down the road, holding him up crucifixion style by his outstretched arms. Green gunned the engine. Everybody braced. From the corner of his eye, Magdalene saw a quick flash of light. Stop! He yelled. The cab lurched to a halt. Green determined that it had just been a woman turning the light on in her room, and he prepared for another go. Malloy managed to leap out of the way not once, but twice. On the third attempt, Green raced toward Malloy at 50 miles an hour. Magnolone watched through splayed fingers. With every second, Malloy loomed larger through the windshield.
Jesus Christ.
Two thuds, one loud, one soft. The body against the hood and then dropping to the ground. For good measure, Green backed up over him again and again. The gang was confident Malloy was dead, but a passing car scared them from the scene before they could confirm. It fell to Joseph Murphy, who had been cast as Malloy's brother, to call morgues and hospitals in an attempt to locate his missing sibling. No one had any information, nor were there any reports of fatal accidents in the newspaper. 5 days later, as Pasquale plotted to kill another anonymous drunk,
Good Lord.
Any anonymous
like
drunk.
They're like fucking assassins.
Well, they were going to kill any anonymous drunk and pass him off as Michael Malloy.
They lost Malloy at this point.
Like, yeah, that fucking guy's Iron Man. He's not going anywhere.
The door to Marino's speakeasy swung open, and in limped a battered, bandaged Michael Malloy, only looking slightly worse than usual. His greeting... I am sure dying for a drink.
You know what? Does he know? Does he know these guys are running him over? Does he just think this is just random shit?
I don't think he. I don't think he's. He hasn't had the best luck in the world.
I know.
He had a story to tell. What he could remember of it.
There you go.
He recalled the taste of whiskey, the cold slap of night air, the glare of rushing lights, then blackness. Next thing he knew, he woke up in a warm bed at Fordham Hospital and wanted only to get back to the bar. On February 21st, 7 months after the murder trust first convened, Michael Malloy finally died in a tenement near 168th Street, less than a mile from Marino's speakeasy.
Jesus.
A rubber tube ran from a gaslight fixture to his mouth, and a towel was wrapped tightly around his face. He would become known as Iron Mike and Mike the Indestructible. Michael, who would become known as Iron Mike and Mike the Indestructible, was finally dead at the age of 59. He died of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Ah, so they finally got him.
On his person, they found a change purse with 78 cents, and in his vest pocket, a broken pocket watch with a picture of his beautiful Kathleen. Dr. Frank Manzella, a friend of Pasquale's, filed a phony death certificate citing lobar pneumonia as the cause. The gang received...
Oh, yeah, had nothing to do with the carbon monoxide.
No, yeah. Nothing.
The gang it's received the only $800 from Metropolitan Life.
Well, fuck yeah.
Murphy and Marino each spent their share on a new suit. Pasquale arrived at the Prudential office confident he would collect the money. From the other two policies, but the agent surprised him with a question. When can I see the body?
Nope.
Pasquale said he'd already been buried. An investigation ensued. Everyone began talking and eventually faced charges. Both the cab driver Harry Green and Frank Manzella made deals and testified for the prosecution. Joseph Murphy, Tony Marino, Daniel Kreisberg, and Frank Pasquale were all tried and convicted of first-degree murder. They were sent to death row at Sing Sing to await execution. All four men died in Old Sparky in the summer of 1934. They killed each of them on the very first try, Timmy.
Didn't take them very long.
A journalist wrote for the now-defunct New York Daily Mirror, reported the executions went off without a hitch, and guards present then drank a toast to the nearly indestructible Michael Malloy. Michael Malloy is buried this day at Ferncliff Cemetery and Mausoleum in Westchester, New York, Timmy.
Very good. And Brandy, what's your final thoughts on the indestructible Michael Malloy?
Should have just left him fucking alone. My God.
Poor guy. He had a rough life.
Well, he did. And those guys, that's just awful.
I don't know that he thought it was all that rough, Timmy.
Yeah, he got some free sardines.
Well, and he's
he
thinking these
on oysters.
Well, and he's thinking these guys are like his friends, his drinking buddies or whatever, and the whole time they're like, oh, well, let's slip some rat poison into a sardine sandwich. Yeah. Well, that didn't
let's
work.
See what we got here.
Let's go for some glass shards in his, you know, whatever.
Those guys really weren't the weren't the sharpest tools in the shed, I think. What's your final thoughts, Colonel, on Michael Malloy, the Iron Mike?
You know what? You need to pick a Frenchman. Don't try to pick an Irishman to do that, too. Because you can run them over with cars. You can beat them down. They always, if there's whiskey involved, Timmy, they're always going to make their way back to the bar.
All right. And you got some shout-outs for us, Colonel?
I do, Timmy.
Lay them on.
I got a bunch. Of course, we got Tasha and Ophelia. Hello, Jeff Girdley and Sam Hildebrand. Jennifer and Linda. Missy Dean Horton. Britt and Chris. Celine. Jeff Chestnut, and Don, Teresa Slavin, Tommy Boomershine, Chanda and Larry, the Trowbridges, Colton, Phyllis Munson, hello, Aaron Wentz, Donna Curran, Brian and Lisa Lawton, Olivia Meyer, the lovely Katja.
Very lovely Katja.
Kate.
The very lovely Kate.
Bridget.
lovely Bridget.
They're not so lovely, Byron Snellings and Denny Mac.
Well, but they're good guys. By the way, last time you called Denny McNamara Denny McFarland, by the way.
Again?
Uh-huh.
Did I again?
Yeah, you screwed it up again.
God, I got to get that right.
Denny, I haven't forgot your request, so we're working on it.
William Truax, Amber Krupp, Gina Spillane and Trixie, Stephanie Quick, Sydney Michael, Jamie Tarantino is not a monkey smoking a cigarette.
No, she's a lovely lady. We were this past weekend on our Facebook page, History Dweebs, the podcast. We asked people to post photos of their senior year in high school, and everyone did, and Jamie didn't. She's very lovely.
Very stunning young lady.
Yeah.
Not a monkey with a cigarette.
She is not a monkey. She doesn't even own a cowboy hat. She doesn't even smoke.
That's false advertising.
She does not even smoke.
Profile picture is
it's false
monkey.
Advertising.
Yeah, she's a fraud.
No, she's a very lovely person. Thank you, Jamie. And all of the folks that we talk about, mention here, give shout-outs to, are active on our Facebook page. And we invite you to join us at History Dweebs, the podcast on Facebook. It's a lot of fun. And, Colonel, before you go on, I want to give a special shout-out to Joe Hopkins, who gave us a very nice review.
I was about to get to Joe Hopkins.
Very sweet. He doesn't let you. He is the epitome of instant gratification.
Yes. Joe posted a very, very nice review for us on iTunes.
He's not going to let you get to what you want.
We really appreciate that, Joe. And, I mean, he's on Team Brandy, I think.
He is.
Yes.
So. But that's okay. He still deserves recognition.
Thank you, Joe, very, very much. If all of you who listen to us on iTunes, if you could leave us a review, we would really appreciate it. It's how other people find us. And I also want to
just move my mic. I'm sorry.
I also want to thank Scott. I'm getting an echo, Colonel.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to thank Scott and Mary Ray. They mentioned us on the Facebook page podcast we listen to, and that always brings us in new listeners. So thank you very much, Mary Ray and Scott. All right, continue.
Of course, that was offset by the other two people who mentioned us during that podcast, during that thread.
No, that's what that. It was very nice of them to do that, and we appreciate it.
Laura O'Reilly, Gabby Lewis, John Cunningham, Tara.
Bond.
Jean Bond.
Lydia, Brandy McBride. Brandy McBride said on my picture, what happened, Colonel?
Oh, from your high school year?
Yeah, I'll tell you what happened. Four kids sucked the life out of you in 35 years.
But your date was very handsome. I must tell you that.
Well, I'm glad you appreciate my taste in
men. Who goes to a Brandy? Seriously, what guy goes to a prom and gets a picture taken with another guy?
Dude. We was leaving my house and my mama wanted a picture.
Unless it's your lifestyle, which is fine, Colonel. We have not passing judgment. If it's your lifestyle, that's fine.
It does seem like you are passing judgment, Timmy. Lydia, Brandy McBride, Maggie Glover, Jeff Appel, Christine
Bourgeois,
Katie Moorhead.
Hey, Katie.
Mary Ray.
Thank you again, Mary Ray, for your kind comments.
Marvin and Marvin Hammond.
Marvin posted a picture of him and his mother.
His lovely mother.
Beautiful woman.
I wonder if she's on Facebook.
Don't creep her, please. But she is. She looks...
a beautiful woman.
She looks as young as he is.
Yeah. Cheryl Musco.
Yes, I like Cheryl. She's fun.
Keith Frusty, Becky Mitchell, Angie Drake.
And I think
Angie Drake's birthday is today.
Happy birthday, Angie Drake.
It is. It's Angie's birthday today.
Why? Can I sing?
No.
Happy birthday, Angie. You won't let me sing.
Steve Miller.
I fly like
Nicholas Starr.
I'm sure he loves that.
Natasha Davis, Neil Eggleton.
Sorry, Steve.
Let's see. Joe Hopkins, of course.
Thank you, Joe.
Sabrina Whitener, new to the group.
Mike Rosen.
Rosen, new to the group.
Yes, Mike, welcome to the group.
These are all new to the group until I stop saying they're new to the group. Beth Wallen.
Hey, Beth.
Josh King.
Hey, Josh.
Brett Wilkins. Chris Lane.
Brett is friends with Cheryl.
Oh, okay.
And you say Chris Lane?
Chris Lane, Megan McKee, Frank Daniels, Jade Burnett.
Hey, Jay.
Welcome.
Let's see.
Welcome.
Rebecca Montalay, Mike Eisenhower, Danielle Fredrickson, Andy Sparacio, Toby Deese, Nancy, your Nancy Jalapeno Papa, your Chiefs are still in the playoffs because they had a bye. But I believe they're going down to the Steelers this week. Timmy, what do you think?
Oh, I hope not. Go Chiefs.
I'm rooting for the Chiefs, but I don't like – the Steelers worry me. Kim Kamikaze Kazmersky, Jennifer Hawkins, Tara Chinchilla, Lindsay McMillan, Sunyana Adanki, Eddie Rushing, Yo Handler, Sammy James, Jason Dykes, Amy Carroll Payne, Tyra Jenkins, Carlene Madison, Alan Dobbs, George Huckler, Kelsey Froh, Peter Former, Amber Anderson, Daniel Fredrickson, Christian Dormer, Little Emmy Waterfall, Susan Angles, Christine Davidson, Don Gordon, John Gray, Dave Hill, Thomas Tui, TJ Youngblood, the lovely Robin Sanchez, and the sweet, 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 sweet Annette Petre.
Lovely.
And lovely. Mm-hmm. Steph Glenn, Christina Hodges, Christina Montana. We know she's very sweet.
She is very sweet.
Mm-hmm. By her house and, well. Maria Barber, Jennifer Potts, Cindy Overstreet Hamilton, who had another lovely picture in her senior pictures. Did you just see that?
Yes.
Paul Mampilli, Mike Arnold, Brittany Powell, Heather Hall, Heather Poole, Ann Daza, Jeff Hopkins. We got Jeff and Joe Hopkins on there. John Janke, Mike Tabor, Lise, Kevin Behan, Carol Nash, Terrell Helmsley, Heather Marshall, Maddie Kinnan, Amelia Roscoe, Mike Daniel, Jim Moyer, Jessica Bishop, Liz Evans, Brenda Deutsch, Stacy Lynn, Jeff Dolan, Miriam Buchwald, Jennifer Winans Miller, Susan Sheldon, Skip Fayou, Little Callie Jones, Brandy Willis D, Sandy Smizer, Norma DiMaggio, Karen Alden, Angie L, Amber Trevino, Carla Nelson, Jessica Winchester, Anita Darden, Leitz, Nancy Weller, Christian Anderson, Valerie Murray, of course, Tammy Ennis. Let's see. Then we got the Colonel's crew.
Hey, did you give a shout-out to Carlene Madison?
Carlene Madison.
Put her on.
Yeah, I got Carlene Madison.
Okay. excuse me.
And Kelsey Froh. So.
I don't doubt you. I sit over here and let you do your thing. He's.
Okay, yeah. And then, of course, we got the Colonel's crew. The lovely redheaded Angie Ball, who threatened me the other day. Sarah Mimosa, Jennifer Burdock, Karen Barnes, Janet Fitzgerald. Congratulations, Janet. She just got her books and she's starting back to school.
Yes. Yay. Good luck with that, Janet. Lovely lady.
Frances Darton.
Beautiful Frances.
Beautiful Frances. Beautiful Irish lass.
Yeah, she relates to this story. She probably knows how to pronounce that county there.
You know what? I bet you could run Frances over. If there, you loaded her up with whiskey, you could run Frances over with her.
And if you gave
Frances an open tab at the pub, you couldn't do nothing to her. She'd show up at that pub every day.
Maybe so.
Jessica Williams. Amanda Bocce Ball. We got, of course, Shannon Rossett, Tiffany, Monica, Scotty J, Angela Cobes, Radhika Smith, Liz Keating, and our mascot for the Colonel crew.
Who's that?
The lovely Lil Fallon.
A beautiful Lil Fallon. She, not little, but beautiful Fallon. She posted a photo of her high school years. She's very lovely.
Well, I think Fallon's only about 5 foot tall, and she's only 23 years old. Mm-hmm. So that's a little Fallon. And we got the three most dangerous women you're ever going to run into. Nicola
Reed, your
solicitor.
Yeah.
My barrister. Mm-hmm. Allie. Now, you know what? I'll tell you what. You give Allie, if Allie would have had an insurance policy on this guy, he'd have lasted about 5 minutes.
She's probably taking one out on you.
You know, Allie used to be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
She used to be a cop. And she said when she was a rookie, one of the first things she did is had to clean up a guy who jumped in front of a train.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
That's no good.
No.
I've seen that. But
does it take more than a hose to do that?
Yeah, I guess.
Pressure washer, I guess.
I mean, it's disgusting.
But, yeah, if Allie would have been in this guy would have lasted about 5 minutes. It wouldn't have been a long story. And then, of course, Charlie.
Charlie from the Insight Podcast. Allie and Charlie, both from the Insight Podcast.
Allie and Charlie from the Insight Podcast, and Charlie with her lovely brood of children.
Yes.
She's got a very interesting crew because they're all doing something different. Yes. They all have different. It's always interesting to hear what she's got going on with her family.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I got for you, Timmy.
All right.
Devil, where can people find us at?
You got two more.
I would like to say.
And I know. I'm saving it for last.
Now, do it now.
Okay. Lady Beverly, of course, you know we never do without you.
Who also posted a picture of the 80s.
Beautiful. But she's a beautiful woman now.
She is.
She looked like a young Helen Mirren. No shit.
Yeah. Her eyes were very beautiful. I mean, she's beautiful.
She is beautiful.
Everything is
beautiful. She's still beautiful.
Her eyes were very
beautiful. Yes.
And when you talk about beauty, she and I believe she could still
all right, get on
walk
with
down
it.
Now and win one of Donald's Mrs. Universe contests.
Yeah, probably.
We got the lovely Dottie Scott.
Yes, thank you, Mom.
Brandy. She's beautiful. Dottie Scott, beautiful, beautiful lady.
Stunning one.
Lovely.
And a heart, I mean, a heart just as big as you're ever going to find.
She doesn't like Tim so much.
Well, Tim tries to kill her
all the time.
You know, Tim calls her the indestructible Dottie Scott.
I bet.
He tried to push it down, break her ankle, whatever.
How many times have you tried to kill Dottie? Maybe I'll bring her some sardine sandwiches this evening. Brandy, where can people find us?
Well, you can find us on Facebook.
Yeah, we have two pages, History Dweebs, and then we have History Dweebs, the podcast. And that's where we interact with all the listeners. So it's a fun group. So please join us, History Dweebs, the podcast.
Twitter.
You can follow us at HistoryDweebs1, or you can follow the Colonel, although I don't think he tweets very much, at Hawk Waters.
You can find us on iTunes.
Yes. Please leave us a review. A nice review, like the one that Joe left us, would be much, much appreciated. It allows folks to find us.
And then Stitcher and Libsyn and Podcast Garden. And
we're all over the place. We're more popular than Captain Kangaroo.
Sure.
Okay, Brandy, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I have none.
All right. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you again next time on History Dweebs.
Bye-bye.
Good day, listeners.
Bye, everyone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.